Welcome to our Bible study on Exodus chapter 32, verses 1 through 14, the Golden Calf, part 2. This is a more detailed discussion regarding the word God, gods, or a god. And be aware that this is a long and tedious discussion that does not offer a final resolution. It simply offers two explanations as to why the passage is translated and perhaps understood differently. Read or listen at your own risk, but I am assuming that you have your Bible open before you and that you have read the passage. In our passage, the people demanded of Aaron, "Make gods for us." Or did they say, "Make us a god"? Translations differ. In the latter translation, the issue is not more than one God, but a false image of the true God. Remember the first commandment, "You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a graven image, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth." And that's in Exodus chapter 20, verses 3 through 4. Back in Exodus chapter 20, verses 22 through 26, we see a specific prohibition against gods of gold, and specific instructions concerning an altar of unhewn stones. And then, in a lengthy, detailed discourse in Exodus chapters 25 through 31, we get the description of the tabernacle and all of its apparatus as the divinely authorized means of securing God's presence among the people. The sin in our story has often been understood as the making of another god, that is, a false god, for the people to worship in place of our God, the true God. And of course, the lesson for us is, we may not have golden calves, but we still have false gods. Alongside this traditional interpretation, but not in place of it, is a reading of the sin in our passage as the creation not just of an idolatrous image of a false god, but rather as a false image of the true God. Now, this interpretation is not new, but the standard English translations, "These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt," and that's in verse 4, obscures the connection between the golden calf and the Lord. At the heart of verse 4 lies a textual and grammatical problem. Does the Hebrew word Elohim refer to the one God of Israel, or to a false god such as Baal, or more generically, to many gods? This problem can be illustrated by comparing the translations offered by two modern versions: the New Revised Standard Version, which I will refer to as the NRSV, and the New Jewish Publication Society, the NJPS, of the first few lines of the story. In the New Revised Standard Version, it says, "Make gods for us." When the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people gathered around Aaron and said to him, "Come, make gods for us, who shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." And Aaron took the gold from them, and formed it in a mold, and cast an image of a calf. And they said, "These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt." And when Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made proclamation and said, "Tomorrow shall be a festival to the Lord." The New Jewish Publication Society says, "Make us a god." When the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, the people gathered against Aaron and said to him, "Come, make us a god who shall go before us. For that man Moses, who brought us from the land of Egypt, We do not know what has happened to him. And then he takes from them and cast in a mold and made it into a molten calf. And they exclaimed, "This is your God, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt." And when Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it. And Aaron announced, "Tomorrow shall be a festival of the Lord." Now notice that in the NRSV, it takes the Hebrew word Elohim as referring to a plural unnamed false gods. Come, make gods for us. And assumes that the sin is worship of gods other than the Lord. But the New Jerusalem takes Elohim as referring to a singular God. Come, make us a God. And is either referring to a false God other than the Lord, or to a false image of the Lord. The reality is that the Hebrew in Exodus 32 is inconsistent. Some aspects of the text support the new, the NRSV's translation, while other aspects support the NJPS. Put simply, the text has conflicting, contradictory grammatical features. The Hebrew noun Elohim can refer generically to the God of Israel, to a singular false god such as Baal, or to more than one god, as in gods, the plural. The noun itself is in plural form. The ending is the masculine plural suffix. But it is often most singular in its meaning. Normally, when trying to understand whether the Hebrew word Elohim refers to God, a god, or several gods, the reader relies on context. So if Elohim is referring to more than one god, the term takes plural verbs and is modified by plural adjectives. That's what we see in Genesis chapter 1. It is clear that Elohim refers generically to the one God of Israel, because all of the verbs are singular. For example, God created and God said. Similarly, in Psalm 73, verse 1, Elohim clearly refers to Israel's God because the adjective good is singular. God is good to Israel. By contrast, in Exodus chapter 20, verse 3, it is clear that Elohim refers to false gods because it is modified by the plural adjective, other gods. Similarly, in Psalm 82, verses 1 through 2, it refers to the false gods of the nations because the verbs in verse 2 are plural, as in you, plural, you all, judge unjustly. But in our passage, context alone does not solve the matter. It only further confuses the issue. Now, the case for the plural is this. There are two significant factors that support the NRSV and other versions that translate with the plural. First, multiple times in the chapter, variations on a common phrase, "who brought you out of the land of Egypt," occur. And in every case except the last one, the verbs are plural, suggesting a plural subject, meaning gods. Second, note that in verse 3 and verse 8, the plural demonstrative pronoun, these. The people speak to Aaron, "Come, make gods for us, who shall go before us." And the "who shall go before us" is plural. And in verse 4, the people exclaim together, "These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt." Again, the "who brought you up" is plural. The Lord speaks to Moses, explaining what the people have done and said at verse 8. They have cast for themselves an image of a calf and have worshipped it and sacrificed to it and said, "These are your gods, O Israel, who brought," again the plural, "you up out of the land of Egypt." Aaron speaks to Moses, explaining what the people said to him, "Make us gods who shall go before again go before us. Only when Moses speaks back to God, reminding the Lord that it was the Lord who brought the people out of Egypt, does the singular form of the verb occur. And Moses speaks to God at verse 11, O Lord, singular, why does your wrath burn hot against your people whom you brought out? Again, it's singular. The consistent use of plural forms of the verb, with the exception of when Moses speaks to God, and the occurrence of the plural demonstrative pronoun these, support understanding the sin of the people as making and worshiping a false god other than the Lord. But now let's look at the case for the singular. We turn to the case for understanding Elohim as referring to a singular subject. And there are three factors that support the NJPS and other versions that favor the singular translation. First, note that Aaron makes only one calf. He took the gold from them, formed it into a mold, and cast an image of a calf. And they said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. But there is only one calf. Why would the people, upon seeing a singular calf, exclaim, these are your gods? The narrative makes little sense at this point. Second, and this is the strongest argument for the singular, in my opinion, is when Aaron, in verse 5, declares a festival, he does so not in the name of a false god, such as Baal or Asherah, or the gods, but in the name of the Lord. When Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made proclamation and said, tomorrow shall be a festival to the Lord. The word festival, by the way, is important here. The term refers not just to any generic religious ceremony, but to the one of the major pilgrimage festivals of the year. Not unusual, like the three major Christmas festivals of Easter, Christmas, and Pentecost, ancient Israelites celebrated three annual pilgrimage festivals: Passover, the festival of unleavened bread, Pentecost, also called the festival of weeks, and Booths, the festival of ingathering. These three festivals are introduced in chapter 23. So from the perspective of the biblical narrative, Aaron and the people are aware of the festivals. The important point here is to note that if this is a festival to the Lord, then a singular antecedent is implied, because the forging of the calf is the occasion for proclaiming a festival, and because the festival is to the Lord. And so there is a logical link between the image of the calf and the Lord. Third, in some cases, Elohim refers to a singular entity, that is, to God, but it takes the plural adjective modifiers. For example, in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 26, the phrase, living God, refers to the one God of Israel, but the modifier living is plural. For who is there of all flesh that has heard the voice of the living God speaking out of fire and remained alive? In rare instances, Elohim clearly carries a singular sense, but takes on a plural verbal form. For example, in Genesis chapter 35, verse 7, the phrase, God had revealed himself, unambiguously refers to the one God of Israel. There is a definite article in Hebrew on that word Elohim, but it takes a plural verb. There he, Jacob, built an altar and called the place El Bethel, because it was there that God had revealed himself to him when he fled from his brother. And now a third case, the case for ambiguity, in that an accurate translation is not always possible. So where does this leave us as the interpreter? The most ready conclusion would be to assume that an ancient Hebrew-speaking audience would have recognized the ambiguity inherent in the passage and would have been comfortable with both the plural and the singular sense of Elohim. An example might be if a person was to ask us if we interpret the Bible figuratively or literally, and we answer yes. In the same way, in answer to the question of whether Elohim here means gods or God, an ancient listener of the story might have answered yes. This is most likely one of those cases where a translation cannot render the unresolvable ambiguity of the original language. I suppose a translator could try something as inelegant as this. This, these, is, are, your God, gods. But really, who could stomach that? So thank you for listening. Take care and God bless.